Hey everyone, this is Eddie Aparicio, and this is Buzzer Beaters. This is a podcast show that's going to be focused on NBA basketball primarily. We'll dibble and dabble on other NBA topics as well. We might get into NCAA, you know, stuff as well in the future. Of course, we're in the NCAA tournament, so we're going to dabble in that a little bit. But as you can see here, I'm joined by somebody who you have not met. Anthony Corral is a long-time friend of mine, and you know, we get together frequently to talk about basketball, and I thought this would be a great way to bring this to everybody on some of the discussions that we have about basketball. Now, it's usually primarily focused on NBA and mainly for the Warriors, right? That's what we essentially talk about. So, but we're going to go ahead and do this show weekly. The format of the show is going to be that we're going to pick two topics each, and we're going to talk about each of those topics. And then it's roughly going to cover about an hour's worth of content. So we're going to have a lot to talk about for this show in the ensuing week. So before I go ahead and introduce Anthony to have him introduce himself to you, for the audience, these sports-related podcasts can be found at gremlingsmedia.com, Rumble, YouTube, under their profile, Gremlings Media, as well as your traditional podcast outlets such as Spotify, Google, and Apple. All right, so Anthony, I set the stage for you to go ahead and introduce yourself. Just go ahead and just introduce yourself to the audience.
Sure. Hey, everyone. My name is Anthony Corral. I am born and raised from San Francisco. I'm the oldest of three sons, known Eddie since high school. So we've been friends a really long time. I've been a Warrior fan forever. I can't remember a time that I wasn't, you know, back in the days of World Be Free, Terry Teagle, all of those guys, amazing. Right through Run TMC some of the darker days when we drafted and lost Chris Webber, you know, when we had a lot of players, Mr. Jennings. I mean, I can go on and on. I've probably forgotten more than I can remember, to be honest with you. But I look at the NBA through the lens of the Warriors as a Warriors fan. So a lot of my topics, a lot of my conversations, a lot of my viewpoints come from that perspective. I am a very avid, though, NBA fan. I followed, you know, obviously was around to watch Jordan, Bird, Magic, Hakeem Olajuwon, which is a personal favorite of Eddie's and I. We both love Olajuwon quite a bit.
Awesome player.
And a lot of other players. So looking forward to meeting with Eddie each week, talking hoops, talking kind of off topics, off hoops, just kind of what we see the future of basketball being. You know, the day-to-day and having kind of those in-depth conversations. You know, I have them with Eddie. I have them with my brother. You know, we're always talking basketball.
It's amazing, man, that we've known each other for 38 years. And you can see our gray beards show
exactly
the longevity of our friendship,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's great to have, you know, we got reconnected during the Warriors' first championship run back in 2015. And we got together every freaking game. And it became kind of a superstition for us that we started kind of like going to have to eat ramen. Ramen soup was our thing. And man, after eating ramen soup all week, man, you have your salt content for the whole month just right there, right?
It's for just the whole year, I think.
But, yeah, for the whole year. And we just get sick of ramen until the next run, right?
Yeah.
So, but anyway, so we're, like I said, we're going to be focused on NBA. So the two topics that I'm going to talk about this week, I'm going to bring up the first one. The first one is going to be the tournament. We're in the NCAA tournament bracket, right? And then the second thing is because we're getting close to the playoffs for the NBA, there's only about 10 to 12 games left. We're going to focus in on who we think, you know, the teams in the play-ins, which ones are going to emerge and which are the top teams on each conference and who we think are going to be great matchups. So that's what we're going to talk. That's what I'd like to talk about. And then, you know, once we finish my segment, Anthony will go over his topics. He has two topics as well. Maybe, Anthony, you can just go ahead and briefly tell everybody what you want to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. So staying true to form, my first topic is a little bit discussion on the Warriors dynasty. Is it over? And a little more in-depth conversation around that. If it is over, why is it over? What can they do to revive it? Can they revive it? Those type of conversations. And then another one was I mentioned my brother. I was having a conversation with my brother. And he mentioned to me, you know, he works with a lot of younger people, you know, and by younger, you know, in their 20s, you know, early 30s. And he sees a trend with those fans basically saying that they follow more players than they do teams. I'm more team centric. Eddie's more team centric. We're older. We're an older generation. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that, whether that's true, whether people are actually following players more than teams and what the impact of that would be on the league, or at least my perception of what that impact would be on the league.
Right. Okay, good. So let's go ahead and get started. So the first topic, since it's the tournament time, right? You know, we just had our NCAA tournament for the first two rounds happen this last weekend, and the Sweet 16 is coming up this upcoming weekend. But I got to tell you, those first two rounds, the round of 64 and the 32, man, they were some good games there. And, you know, there was, of course, true to form, a few upsets, right? I mean, a lot of brackets were busted. I mean, you have, you know, number four Auburn losing to number 13 Yale. That was one that was a big loss for a lot of people. And then number three Kentucky losing to number 14 Oakland. I mean, that's like a huge upset. I mean, Kentucky was considered one of the guys that might go to at least Elite Eight, you know, definitely coming out of the first weekend. But it's incredible to see, you know, that loss, right?
That's Calipari, right?
Calipari. And then there's been a lot of, you know, discussions and news about what's going to happen with Calipari, right? You know, I don't know if you know this, but, you know, Matt Crail, you know, a.k.a. Peckerhead, he's in our fantasy football league. His son goes to Kentucky. And, you know, true to form, of course, when they lost, you know, he was just mouthing off about fire Calipari. That guy shouldn't be on the freaking, you know, team anymore. And, of course, then that whole thing kind of started in the internet, right? It was like, what's next for the Kentucky Wildcats? And, you know, is Calipari still going to be around? So, you know, that definitely that loss reverberated through a lot of the Kentucky fans. I mean, that's a blue chip organization, right? Blue Bloods and well, you know, a lot of their.
It is, you know, just some thoughts on that, you know, I think most colleges are one and done now for most players if they even elect to go to college as opposed to the G League or come from international or whatever, however they're going to enter the draft. But Kentucky is true to form. They were one of the originators on the one and done. They had a lot of players that would come and play for one year and leave. Absolutely. So I'm curious, you know, I'm curious on the impact of Calipari, seeing that basically next year he might have a whole new squad, a whole new set of freshmen, a whole new set of players. So I'm curious how that's going to manifest itself in terms of his impact on the team. Is it more just his name and his stigma that they're trying to get away from, or is it actually something that he's doing in terms of teaching the young freshman hoops?
You know, it's a good point, Anthony. And by the way, I nicknamed Anthony Twan. That's my nickname for him because Antoine. So Twan, yeah. Anthony. Anthony's just, you know, it's too proper for me. I got to go with Twan, man. But anyway, so you know, in my opinion, you know, when you hear Calipari talk, that guy is a salesman, man. He is, I mean, he can sell.
Too slick.
He is slick, and he, I mean, he gravitates to him because of the way he just engages, right? Yeah. You know, he reminds me of a lot. I would say Deion Sanders. He's from that same cloth where Deion Sanders kind of has that swagger. You know, he's just got that, the way his cadence, the way he talks to you with conviction. Calipari has that same thing. So you can see why he gets usually the best players in the country to come play for him. But, you know, when you do that, you're supposed to be winning some games, right? I mean, of course, a lot of these players that you already mentioned, they go one and done, right? But you know, if he's getting the best of the best, right, he should be able to coach these guys up to play in advance. And, you know, at this point, Kentucky should have a lot more championships. They have championships, but they should have a lot more. So, yeah, but it's a good point. But anyway, so as I was mentioning, you know, Matt was ranting and raving about fire Calipari, and of course, all of that was the discussion on the internet about, you know, what's next for the Kentucky Wildcats after they just got, you know, ousted in the first round, which nobody really saw. But this guy, you know, number 14 Oakland, there was this guy who was just shooting threes, lights out. I mean, they couldn't stop him. I mean, this guy looked like he was part of the Warriors. I mean, the way he was shooting. So, but some other upsets that happened, you know, you had BYU losing to Duquesne, number 11, Duquesne, number six, BYU. Then you had St. Mary's close to home, you know, losing to number 12, Grand Canyon. And St. Mary's is a college that my daughter got accepted to and actually got a scholarship. So I'm proud to say that. But that's not her number one choice right now. LMU is her number one choice, but LMU is not in the tournament. So we're not going to talk about LMU. And then you had, interestingly enough, a number 11, New Mexico. They were favored. Number 11, New Mexico was favored over Clemson, and Clemson just whipped that butt, man, big time. They just banked them. And that pretty much shows you that strength of a conference is part of the reason why I think happened. I mean, they're playing in the ACC. They play against some of the great teams, and that, you know, there's something to be said about that. So you kind of question why were they favored over Clemson, right? So, but what's interesting about the tournament, too, is that, you know, all of the top one seeds and all the top two seeds advanced, you know, in the first weekend. And that hasn't happened very much. As a matter of fact, I was you know, as I was looking over the, you know, scouring the web about some of this content, this only happened twice in the last century. So it's very rare that you see, you know, these eight teams, the top eight teams, you know, in the tournament advance out of the first round. So, you know, mainly the number one seeds are UConn, Houston, Purdue, North Carolina. And then number two seeds are Arizona, Marquette, Tennessee, and Iowa State. You know, all of these guys, all the number one seeds to me looked pretty impressive, although Houston was in a pretty close game. I don't know if you saw that the second round game against Texas A&M when Houston played against Texas A&M, but that one to me was probably one of the better games of the tournament because, you know, Houston was essentially down to, they had like four of their players that fouled out, four of their starters. And even one of their best point guards, he fouled out. And then they brought in some kind of scrub off the bench. He had to make free throws. I mean, it was just like, it was just drama galore because, you know, many picked Houston to go to the Final Four. And, you know, they almost got ousted themselves. But that was one of the better games that I saw. And then also the other one was Creighton versus Oregon. I don't know if you saw that one, but that one was double overtime. And Creighton was, it was, they shot like, they went on a 15-0 run or 12-0 run on in the second overtime. And they pretty much just sealed it for Oregon. But Oregon was just doing like, you know, a total pick and roll pro game between these two players. That was another great game. So overall, great weekend. And I'm sure you enjoyed some of the games. Which game stood out to you, Anthony? Which ones did you watch?
The Oakland game, the upset. I enjoyed that one. That one was pretty good. I also was watching, who was it? So many games.
Oh, yeah. Just whatever stood out to you.
I liked Oakland. I saw the Purdue game. That was pretty good. The Purdue was pretty unstoppable. What's that? The big man. What's his name?
Zach Edey.
Zach Edey. Yes. Yep. So I wanted to talk about that guy in a minute, but
we'll do that. We'll for sure do that. But
I wanted that he was pretty unstoppable force. You know, when I was watching him Purdue, so that was a pretty good game. You know, like I said, I'm not as big as to the NCAA as I used to be. You know, I used to follow it a lot more when players were in there multiple years, 2, 3, 4 years. You know, I'm more like what I call a fair weather fan when it comes to NCAA. Now I'll watch, you know, if there's a game going on, I'll pop in, check it out, watch a couple of quarters, that type of thing. You know, Zach Edey was good. Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, just to let the audience know, Anthony, as I mentioned, Tuan and I are NBA fans big time. We'll dibble and dabble in the NCAA. We'll comment on the NCAA, but we'll probably come across like Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith do on the NCAA tournament.
I'll more than you.
We dibble and dabble in it. We're not experts. Like a Clark Kellogg, he covers this stuff. He is you know, the anchor of that group because he knows all this stuff. Whereas Charles and Kenny, they're just trying their best to figure it out, right? Yeah. And that's what Anthony and I are. We're trying our best to kind of really figure out the whole NCAA tournament. But I watch it just because I do brackets, you know? Anthony, have you done any brackets?
No, I didn't do any brackets. This is the first year in like 10 years. I mean, get on my soapbox here for 2 seconds, you know, with the players staying a minimum, you know, a maximum of 1 year, it seems like now, except for some of the, you know, there's still a handful of 4 year players. And then as well as this portal, this new portal process where people are jumping squads, it just makes it really hard to, you know, have any fans or, you know, and especially in Northern California where we're not a really big college town, you know? So, I mean, if Berkeley's in, if Stanford's in, you know, those type of things, we'll follow them, but we're not really, you know, I paid more attention growing up to the Georgetowns and North Carolinas and NC States and Dukes, you know, Kentucky's, Villanova's, UConn's, you know, those type of players. I can tell you, you know, from the old guys who came from where, it gets harder and harder nowadays. So it's been something that's been a little more less appealing to me because of the turnover, because of the, you know, again, some of the players joined the G League. Some of the better players don't. A lot of the players come from Europe. You know, those type of things. I know I mentioned that earlier. But so it's a little bit harder for me to stay. But I try to keep up with it. I try to enjoy the tournament. But I enjoy it kind of on a different level now.
Yeah. So, you know, I myself, I've been going to Reno with, you know, my brother-in-law and a couple of other buddies. We've been going for the last 6-7 years. And that's forced me to kind of get into this a little bit more. You know, and actually, I did my first bet on any you know, sports bet when I went to the Reno weekend about six years ago. And so, you know, I asked what I did this last, you know, last weekend, you know, the first weekend of the NCAA tournament is I did that. I did a little bit of gambling here and there for different games. Of course, I didn't do well. Of course, the house always wins, right?
You're hanging out with Osani.
Yeah, but I did a bracket, and I'll tell you who my final four are. And okay. My final four are still alive. And believe it or interestingly enough, my final four coincides exactly with Joe Lenardi. And Joe Lenardi is a big guy who covers, you know, the NCAA with ESPN. So my final four are UConn, number one, UConn, number two, Arizona, number one, Houston, and number two, Tennessee. That's my final four. Okay. So we'll see, you know, by next Monday or by this upcoming weekend if that's going to happen. But another reason why I watched, you know, the tournament is because it's a great stage to see the next NBA prospects, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm always looking at the NCAA tournament through that lens. I want to see who stands out, right? And in my opinion, man, I looked at all of these players. I mean, some of the top guys that are actually projected to go in this draft, I'll name some of these names. You know, there's Rob Dillingham of Kentucky. He's a point guard. You have Donovan Klingon of UConn. He's that big 7'3 center for UConn. You have Dalton Connect, who is a shooting guard for Tennessee. He's 6'6", so that, you know, his size is actually attractive. You already mentioned Zach Edey, right, for Purdue. He's 7'3". Then you have Kyle Filipowski of Duke. He's 7 foot, and he's a pretty versatile-looking 7-footer. You have a Jared McCain, who was that point guard from Duke who just went lights out, you know, in that game, the last game that he was shooting threes galore. He's a 6'3 point guard. Tyler Kolek is another point guard from Marquette. He's 6'3. Tristan Da Silva from Colorado. All of these guys are projected to go in the draft, right? But in my opinion, man, none of these guys really stood out to me. Yeah. The only guy that I would say stands out is the guy you mentioned, Zach Edey. But, man, he's not athletic enough to be good in the NBA.
That's what I was thinking when I was watching him too. Yeah. He moves so.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on, you know, any of those players I mentioned? I mean,
yeah, now Zach Edey was the one that I was, you know, and what's funny is how the older I've gotten, the more I try to, like when I was younger, you know, I would see an athlete and I would say, oh man, look at that guy on the court. He's dominating. He's doing this, he's doing that. Right. And as I've gotten older, I look at them and I go, how does that translate to the NBA? Like,
right.
Because, right. You know, there's speed and then there's strength, right? And if you don't have both, you're going to suffer. It's going to take you a while. You know, like, you know, you take Kuminga, for example, who was probably pretty fast, but his strength part, he hadn't developed it. He hadn't developed angles. And so I look at Edey and I'm going, man, I don't think this guy's going to – I don't think he's going to translate. I mean, I think he'll be a bench guy, a guy that comes off the bench maybe. You know, but I like in terms of him, I just didn't, I don't see it. He's just too slow, too deliberate. He's going to, you know, can he get out and guard a point guard, which bigs have to do nowadays? Like, there's no way, man, they're going to run around him and they're going to smoke him. I mean, if it was, you know, 30 years ago where you can go down in the low post and hang out for a while, sure, he'd be strong there. But in today's game, I don't see it. I'm curious to see where he gets drafted. I mean, I wouldn't like looking at him. I wouldn't be surprised if it's late first round, early second round pick.
You know, he's projected to go late first round. And, you know, his game, when I watch him play, he reminds me a lot of the way, like, a Yao Ming played. You know, Yao Ming was a lumbering guy, but he had a lot of skills, right? This guy doesn't have the same skill set as a Yao Ming, right? But, you know, he's dominant because he's so freaking big. It's like Shaq, right? You know, Shaq was dominant, right? He's just dominant because he was so big. Is Shaq skilled? Yeah, but that doesn't really jump off the screen when you watch him. It's his size and his strength and just overpowers people. The same thing happens with Zach Edey here. But what's interesting is that, you know, you brought up that, you know, his skill set may not necessarily translate in the NBA. Nikola Jokic, you know, he got drafted in the second round. A lot of people thought that he was the same way. His game couldn't translate in the NBA because he's kind of slow, lumbering. He still plays that way, but no one saw this skill set, right? I mean, these scouts like missed that. They're like, I mean, this guy is just unbelievable with his IQ, right? Maybe that's where maybe Zach Edey could, you know, be of use in the NBA, is maybe his IQ. But that doesn't jump off the screen either to me, right? He's on a play.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see him as good as a passer as Jokic is. But again, if you can run the offense through him again, and a lot of it depends on who you build around him, right? Who you know, what kind of players are around him. He's going to need a lot of players that can shoot the three. He's going to need a lot of players that can, you know, if he's going to be a passer or a focal point of the offense, he's got to be able to do a lot of dives to the hoop and see those guys cutting to the hoop and things of that nature. Yeah.
Yep. You know, but you know, I named all these guys, and the one guy to me that stood out that wasn't even on, he's not even projected to be drafted. To me, I don't know if you saw the Houston versus Texas A&M game, or even just Houston in general, but their point guard, Jamal Shedd, I think that guy is explosive. He reminds me a lot of a Baron Davis. But the only thing, he's only 6'1", whereas Baron Davis was like 6'3". And, you know, they're both kind of, you know, husky guys, both very explosive, you know. And to me, he jumped out to me as like someone who would translate into the NBA. And he might be one of these guys who just kind of just gets undrafted and falls onto a team and then just explodes, right? I mean, that, there's a lot of those cases in the NBA, that those success stories that happen. But anyway, you know, I just wanted to kind of cover the tournament a little bit. Yeah. We're pretty much out of time for that segment. So I'm going to go ahead and jump to the next segment, and that's the NBA playoffs. We have, you know, mainly about we have about like 10 to 12 games left in the NBA season, and there's a lot of these teams that are vying for position. I mean, we know that in the East, you know, you have Boston, you have Milwaukee, you have Cleveland. You know, these guys are essentially some of the best, you know, in there. But then you have like, you know, some of these teams, like in number 5 through 10, you have Orlando, Indiana, Miami, Philadelphia. You know, you have Chicago. You know, some of these guys are going to be in the play-in tournament, right? So, and on the West, you know, you have, you know, the main guys, Oklahoma City, Minnesota, you know, Denver Nuggets, Los Angeles Clippers. And then from there, you know, it kind of, it drops off a little bit. But, you know, it's just interesting that, you know, from number 6 through 10, you know, there's only about 3 or 4 games, you know, that separates. But now, since there's not that many games left, it's going to be hard for some of these teams to catch up. So, mm-hmm. you know, I wanted to get maybe your take as to who you thought would emerge out of the play-in tournaments, you know, but for both conferences in the East and the West. And I'll give you who my take is from there.
Well, it's good. So a couple of weeks ago, I would have said, man, I wouldn't want to play the Warriors or the Lakers if I'm the 1 or 2 seed. Yeah. I don't think that's the case anymore. The Lakers the Warriors have been in a free fall. They've been, and you know, we're going to talk about that in a minute on when we get to my topic. But the one exciting team that I'm looking at is the Houston Rockets. Now, if they get in, they're going to obviously replace the Warriors or the Lakers. At this point, it would be the Warriors, since the Warriors are the 10th seed. Right. They seem like an exciting team. They're a young team. They seem like they're a team that's getting kind of into the groove. They're young and dumb enough to not realize, you know, the moment and to kind of impact. So they seem like a team that would be pretty good. The other team. So what I'm noticing in this trend is, you know, obviously the top four are all younger teams. I mean, Jokic is youngish. I wouldn't call him young, but he's youngish. But you got Oklahoma, which is all youth all the time, playing really well. You got Minnesota now with Anthony Edwards is like becoming a powerhouse, and they're kind of one of the teams that focus more on defense than they do on offense, which is good to see. And you know, they're a strong offensive team, but you know, they got a couple of bigs. I don't know when Towns is scheduled to get back and that type of thing, but they got a couple of big guys in there. So they look like they to me, Minnesota more than any other team, I think has the structure to win a championship. Right. I think that they have the build. They can sustain because, you know, they can score with you if they need to, but they can also stop you when they have to. You know, I look at like Oklahoma, they still seem a little young. I think they're going to get upset, whether it's – I don't think they'll get upset in the play-in game necessarily, but it might come after. Then you got the New Orleans Pelicans, you know, with – if Zion can stay healthy, you know, they're a fun team to watch, an athletic team to watch, but I just don't think they have enough to kind of get through like Denver's or even Minnesota's. And then the Clippers, who are, to me, are the low-key scary team in this scenario. I know, Ed, you're a big Kawhi fan. You've always been a big Kawhi fan. I think they're a sneaky team to watch. I think they could easily upset a higher seed, right? If they played today, it would be Clippers, New Orleans. I think the Clippers would beat New Orleans. Like, I just think flat out that they would beat them in a series. And Sacramento, man, that's a Jekyll and Hyde team. Yep. Like, it just seems like when they're good, they're good, and when they're not, they're not. And I don't have faith in them. And then from there you get to, you know, Dallas. Dallas is a solid squad. You know, Luka's playing well. Kyrie's always, you know, he's like probably one of the most skilled players in the NBA in terms Absolutely. Of what he can do with the ball. I mean, that dude is fantastic. And then you get to the old guys, right? Durant on Phoenix, LeBron on the Lakers, Steph. I just think those three teams aren't going to make much noise. I think they're going to run out of steam. Phoenix has the best shot because obviously they got Devin Booker. He's a younger player. They got a little bit of a shot, but to me, my mentality has changed. Had we had this conversation, like I said, 3 weeks ago, I'd be like, oh, watch out, because any of those teams can beat it. But I think they're losing steam. I think age is playing a factor, and that's where I'm at. What do you think?
So let me, before I even tell me, before I tell you what I think, who do you think is going to emerge out of the play-ins, you know, for both conferences?
So were we talking the 9 and 10 seed, or are you talking out of the 7 through 10?
Just who's going to make the 7 and 10 seeds for both conferences out of the play-in? Who's going to emerge out of these play-in tournaments?
I'm thinking Dallas and Phoenix. They'll come out of it.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I have Lakers and Dallas. In the okay. West. All okay. Right. So how about in the East?
In the East, who do we got here? We got Miami, Philly, Chicago, and Atlanta. If I had to go with the East, when's Embiid's due to get back? Do you know?
No, I don't know. I know he's coming near, but I don't know the timetable. I don't know. I know he's coming soon, though. And he's going to – I mean, there's talk that he'll be ready for the playoffs. And you can see how valuable Embiid is to that team because
yes,
they were like number three. They were number three, and now they're number eight, right? So
yep.
Yeah. So if he comes back, it's a problem.
Maxey's been playing well, though. Well, with me, it's hard to bet against the Heat. Every year I'm like, oh, they're old, they're done, they're not going to do it. I think the Heat come out of there. I think the Heat's one of the teams for sure.
Okay. What about the other one?
After that, I'll stick with Philly. I think the top two, the 7 and 8 seeds right now, I think they're the ones that advance. Atlanta.
Yeah, but the only thing is that right now is Philly would play Miami because 7 and 8 play against each other. Or no, wait, sorry. I think that's
no, 7 plays 10, 8 plays 9.
Yeah, you're right.
7 plays 10, 8 plays 9. Yeah,
8 plus 9. Yeah, so you're right. Yep. It would be Miami and you said Philly. Okay.
Yeah, the top two, the 7 and 8 seeds right now, I think they'll advance. Yeah.
Yep. I can't dispute that. I would say that you're, I would agree with yours as well. And how about in the West?
In the West, yeah, like I said, Dallas and Phoenix, I think they're gonna stick the 7 and 8 seeds there too.
Yeah, you know, I say, you know, I'm saying that it's going to be Dallas. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I think it's going to be Dallas and Lakers.
You think so?
Yeah, that's what I think. That's my call.
So, well, that's what I'm calling today, but I will tell you this. I'll go with an upset. If Houston catches the Warriors, Houston beats Dallas.
No way.
Yeah.
No way. I
think okay. So.
I don't.
We'll see if it's true in the next couple. But
we'll barter that one, man. We'll have a little wager on that.
I'm gonna tell you. I think if they get in there, I think they'll beat Dallas and make the playoffs. Which right? Because technically that's not the playoffs, right? They call the play-in game some sort of invisible game that doesn't count for anything.
Yep. Well, you know what? Warriors just won tonight. By the way, I just got a notification. Warriors just won.
They beat. All right.
But Miami was depleted. They had no Jimmy Butler, no Tyler Hero. You know, no to Duncan Robinson. You know, all they have was Bam Adebayo and some scrubs, right?
And so Vasquez, do they have Jaime Vasquez there?
Yeah, Jaime Vasquez.
Their Pajemski, their version of Pajemski.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, but yeah, no, I think that's it's a good breakdown. You know, I think, you know, out of the East, I mean, let's face it, Boston is head and shoulders above everybody else. Although they just blew a 30-point lead the other night against, you know, Atlanta. Which, you know, Boston is Heckle and Jekyll sometimes as well. But you know, they to me, they're, you know, right now they're like 10 and a half games above the second place team, Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, that just goes to show you how dominant that team is. So let me ask you this. Who do you think are going to be the final four in each conference? Now, you know, we don't know how the seedings are all going to play out right now, right?
Correct.
I mean, it's still kind of early. But let me ask you this. Let's just say the seedings played out like we think they might. Who do you think is going to emerge out of the East as a, you know, the top two, and who's going to emerge?
So you're talking about the Eastern Conference Finals and the Western Conference Finals?
Yep.
Who do I think will be there?
Yep.
So I think Boston will be there for sure. I don't think Milwaukee will be there. I think they're going to falter. I don't think they're a strong team. From there, the teams that intrigue me just based on their DNA, I think Cleveland. Cleveland's a solid team. I like them. I like Indiana quite a bit too. I like Halliburton. I like what they're doing there. Also, you know, they just watched them on the Warriors and they beat the crud out of the Warriors. So they look solid. Those are the two teams that intrigue me.
Yep.
I'm going to go with one of those two squads that'll be there with Boston.
Okay. And for me, it's Boston, of course, right? And you know who the sneaky team for me in the East is? The New York freaking Knicks.
That's who I thought, yeah.
The New York freaking Knicks.
It's so hard, Ed, being a West Coaster.
I hear you, man. But check it out, man. They're still winning without Julius Randle and without Mitchell Robinson. Mitchell Robinson hasn't played for freaking I don't know how many games, and they are still really, really freaking good. You have, Jalen Brunson. I mean, that guy is unstoppable.
He's a player.
He's unstoppable. Nobody could stop that guy. He's like a Kyrie Irving, but without the freaking handles. He does it with positioning, and he can post up, you know, bigger players. He just knows. He's shifty, right? He just knows how to play.
Jimmy Hardaway.
Yeah, he's really shifty, man. So to me, it's Boston and New York coming out of the East. All right, those are my top.
So five. just to give you a quick commentary on New York. Yes, New York is solid, but I get so thrown off with the media machine, you know, the hype machine. Everything New York does is like magnified times 10.
Tired of Stephen A. Smith talking about that.
Well, no, it's not necessarily tired. You know, it's not tired of them talking. They can talk, but it's just every year they talk and it's nothing. It's like you're talking nothing. You know, every year they get hyped. So I'm gonna sit on them and wait. I'm gonna, like I said, I'll stick with Indiana or Cleveland. And if you had to make me bet money, I'll go with Cleveland. I'll go with some sort of Cleveland, Boston. Okay.
So Boston,
but I hear you. Based on what I've been watching and looking at the Knicks, it wouldn't surprise me if the Knicks were there, but I'm going to hold off on the hype machine until they actually do something.
Okay. So you say your final two of that East are Boston and Cleveland.
I'm
saying Boston and New York. And then your play-ins, we both agree, it's going to be Miami and Philadelphia.
East. Yep.
Okay. How about in the West? Who's going to emerge as the top two out of the West?
Yeah, I think I mentioned them already. I think it's going to be Denver and Minnesota.
Okay.
Denver. Yeah, Minnesota. although I'll be whoever the Clippers play, that's going to be – I think if the Clippers can stay healthy, if they keep all their players and they play right, the Clippers can come in there and definitely take a spot. But I'm going to stick with Minnesota and Denver. I think Oklahoma is a year or two out still. They're a dominant and strong team. I just think they're a couple of years out. And so, that's who I would go with. And then for my 7 and 8 for them, I'm going to stick with Dallas and Phoenix. Unless the Rockets get in, then I'll go with the Rockets and Phoenix.
Okay. And my final are going to be, in my opinion, going to be Denver and I think the Clippers. And then I think it's going to be Dallas and the Lakers. All right. So there you have.
You think Dallas and the Lakers. All right.
Yep. All right. So there you have our playoff picture. Those are my two questions that I wanted, or two topics that I want to bring up for this week. Essentially, you know, the NCAA tournament and the East-West playoff picture. So we covered those. Now it's to your stuff, man. You already talked about, you know, your topic, so I'll let you go ahead and kick it off.
Yeah. So the first thing I wanted to talk about, and there's kind of layers here. My account managed to reset itself, so I don't have my notes in front of me right now. But is the war this again? Like I said earlier. I look at the NBA through the lens of the Warriors. I'm a huge Warriors fan. The question I had for you, Ed, is the dynasty over? Now, there's a couple of things that go with this. Number one, obviously the Warriors won the NBA championship 2 years ago. They made a lot of moves as a result of that championship.
Yep.
Some of those moves were getting rid of Poole, getting rid of Wiseman, getting rid of their youth. When they drafted Wiseman, they were what's affectionately known as the two timelines. They were trying to draft for the future and keep the current successful. So the first question I have for you, and I have my own opinions on this, is did winning the championship for the Warriors in the long term hurt or help the Warrior organization?
Cool, man. Well, you know, the organization is all about trying to win as many championships as they can, right? And I think because Steph Curry is now 36 years old, at the time he was 34, and I think that championship wasn't expected. It came out of nowhere. It's kind of the bonus championship, as, you know, a lot of the locals kind of call it, right? And the thing is, you know, I think because it came as a surprise, you know, prior to that even happening, when they had that horrible 2020 season, when Steph Curry got hurt, Draymond Green kind of lost interest, you know, Klay Thompson got hurt, you know, they were drafting for the future. And that's why you saw Jonathan Kuminga get drafted. You saw James Wiseman, Moses Moody, Now you have Trace Jackson Davis. Now you have Brandon Pajemski. You know, that's the reason is they thought they weren't going to be good. They thought that their window was over, so they had to kind of draft for the future. And, you know, they still had this superstar in Steph Curry, and they thought, hey, you know, after they won the 22 championship, hey, man, we have all of this youth, and, you know, that we drafted because we thought we weren't going to go anywhere. And now we have this superstar who's still kind of almost at his peak, kind of declining a little bit, but he's practically at his peak right now.
Yep.
On the downward slide. And then you have Klay Thompson, who, you know, is recovering from those two severe injuries, you know, that happened to him. And then, you know, of course, you still have a very, you know, when he plays, you know, engaged Draymond Green, who's, you know, still a high basketball IQ guy who does a lot for that team, you know, both offensively and defensively. And you can't dispute it. You can see it on the screen. You know, as long as his anger management is intact, which it seems like he is right now. So whatever they did for that indefinite suspension, that worked. And, you know, I think that he's kind of helped these young kids kind of come up to speed. It's helped. But what happened is these veterans, because they won, they kind of created this chasm, in my opinion, with these new kids, right? These new kids wanted to get playing time, you know, and of course the organization was trying to win, you know, now because of Steph Curry. You know, they recognize that Steph Curry, with him, they can win another championship. And, you know, and then it's, you see what happened, right? You know, some of these kids were kind of starting to voice their displeasure. You know, Jordan Poole, I'm sure, you know, he was just popping off. You know, of course, he had a great season, when they won the championship, and then he got paid. And then, you know, the Draymond Green, you know, incident, punching him, essentially just ran him out of town because it completely, you know, just absorbed or all of his confidence. And you can see he's not the same guy anymore, right?
Yeah. He hasn't been right since, man.
Yeah, and then you see, you know, when these younger guys see a leader of the team being, you know, doing this, you know, and then the organization not really doing anything about it, they're going to start kind of questioning the organizations. Like, what the hell are we doing here, man? You're letting a guy like that just punch people around and let him get away with everything. And these kids are like probably starting to question things. And from what I heard, Kevon Looney was the guy who kind of, you know, rounded the troops a little bit, you know, kind of became the voice, you know, or helping to bring back some normalcy to the squad. Right. He was kind of like the second leader with these younger guys. Right. That kind of helped quell their frustration. Right. So it's a long winded answer to your question, Anthony. But I think that championship in 2022, I think because it was unexpected and because of what they drafted and because of the talent they already had, it created this dichotomy, and it created this frustrated locker room. It created this broken locker room because of the complexion of that team. So I think, yeah, I think that championship created, it fractured the locker room because of what the complexion of that team at that time. Now what I think what you're going to see moving forward is, you know, if the Warriors don't make the play-in tournament this season, there's going to be some big changes, man. We got to talk about that too, if we think that, yep, you know, the big three are going to get traded or not. But I think there's going to be some big changes if they don't make the top. I think there's going to be big changes anyway, but especially if they don't make the top 10, they're going
to. Yeah, to go along with what you're saying, I mean, some of the things that kill me is, you know, for whatever reason this year, Kuminga mouthed off.
Yeah.
Kuminga said, if they're not going to play me, I don't want to be here, or something along those lines, right? He and I don't know if that was the reason that Lacob or Kerr or Dunleavy or whoever, you know, heard that. But you see the way Kuminga's playing now. He's playing fantastic. He's a star in the making. The question that I have, and it goes along with you with the dichotomy of the separation, was if Kuminga would have done this 2 years ago and started this journey 2 years ago, then we would have a bridge to potentially win a championship today.
He wasn't ready, though. He wasn't ready at that time.
Well, he may or may not have been ready, but the thing is, we don't know because he wasn't afforded that opportunity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the reason he wasn't afforded that opportunity was the same reason why Wiseman wasn't afforded that opportunity, was because we need to win now.
Right.
And so they gave up on the development of their young. And now they have – now I think they've picked something up, at least with Jackson Davis. You know, hey, if we get four-year players or players that have, you know, 100 games under their belt – then we're going to come in and have a better idea with who they got. Now, Jackson Davis, I think, is a really good player, whether he's a star, whether ultimately he's a starter, to be determined. But I think the Warriors have changed their philosophy to bring in players that can impact the team now. But 3 or 4 years ago, they were drafting players with potential, right? Yep. Kuminga was a potential draft. Wiseman was a potential draft. I would say that Moody was more of a, hey, this guy's patient, his style. But you see, like, it's confusing as a Warriors fan because you look at players like Moody, Looney. Now, Looney, we'll keep him to the side. But Moody has done and said all the right things. He hasn't popped off. He's ready when available. But what kind of example does it set when Moody's doing everything right, but yet he doesn't play? You know, and when he's out there, you know, he'll have a hot quarter and Kerr sits him down. Now, I'm not here to question Kerr's rotation. You know, I don't think the Warriors are a rotation away from winning anything. I don't think that if he would have done anything. As a matter of fact, in terms of Kerr, I admire him for some of the difficult conversations he's had. Like, I can't imagine what it was like sitting Clay down and going, hey, Clay, you're going to come off the bench. I mean, that is a difficult, difficult conversation. And I think Kerr handled that well. Clay has accepted it well. But I just think that we didn't ramp up our young guys to start to take over. And now that difference is what's impact. I think they impacted the youth. I think Kuminga's still a couple of years away. And in a couple of years, Curry will be 38 years old and probably, you know,
retiring
or playing a lot less minutes. Or, you know, I was watching the Minnesota game, right? And, you know, I don't know if you know this, but one of my kind of secret favorite players has always been Mike Conley. I've always liked Mike Conley. He's got a real good head about him. He's got a real good kind of outlook, the way he behaves. And I was watching him with Minnesota, and I'm thinking that is the kind of system that Curry needs to strive for, where Conley's not the A, B, or C guy, but when he needs to do something, he can pop in, do what he can do, and then, boom, take a break, right? Pop in, do what he needs to do. But I'm looking at this, and I'm going, dude, Curry's carrying the offense. Like, Curry has to do everything. There's nothing coming on the horizon. You know, maybe Kuminga's going to relieve him of that, but I don't know what happened to Wiggins. Wiggins fell off the face of the planet. I mean, I know he's had some personal stuff and he's been in and out. I don't know if that's looming over his head or not. I'm not sure if we've gotten Wiggins of old from Minnesota that basically, you know, plays when he wants to play and is like, whatever, just kind of cavalier attitude. I don't know what his deal is, but Wiggins was one of the main reasons we won that championship in 22. And ever since then, he's been a shadow of himself. Yeah, and so they took a gamble. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I'm saying we're getting glimpses of Wiggins for sure. But yeah, I mean, there's obviously something going on with him. There's family related stuff. His brother, who plays for Europe, you know, actually just essentially took some time off from the team, essentially indefinitely, just like Wiggins did last season and a little bit of this season. So there's something going on there. A lot of speculation that it's, you know, some family related matter. It could be his dad. I mean, his dad played in the NBA, Mitchell Wiggins. Yep. So it could be some health related issue with him. Who knows? But yeah, you're right. All these points, I wanted to kind of touch upon a couple of points that you brought up.
Yeah,
you brought up. You brought up about Kerr and how he managed the, you know, the Klay Thompson thing. I think that conversation was definitely hard, but it would have been a lot harder if that was the first time he did it. He actually had that conversation the first time with Andre Iguodala.
Yeah.
And Andre Iguodala paved the way for these type of decisions to be made.
I agree, Ed, except real quick. I agree with what you're saying with one simple exception. Iguodala wasn't a 10-year starter on that team. He came over from a pick. He had been a starter on other teams.
Yes.
So it was, but I agree. So I'll let you finish your thought, but just really quick, I wanted to jump in.
But then you had Chris Paul, who's another one he had to have a conversation with, because Chris Paul, you know, lost his, you know, starting games this season. You know, how many times he started games. I think this is the first time he ever came off the bench in his entire career was this season. So Steve Kerr had to have that conversation. So this kind of paved the way for that conversation to be had with Klay Thompson. But it's a little different because these two players, you know, are new, you know, to the Warriors, whereas Klay Thompson has been part of the championship, you know, dynasty that we've seen, right? So it's a harder conversation. But, you know, that I think helped. The other thing is that you brought Trayce Jackson-Davis. You know, Trayce Jackson-Davis is who they wanted James Wiseman to be.
Correct.
James Wiseman was an offensive-oriented, athletic center, young, very, you know, kind of a little bit still uncoordinated, but you could see the potential with what he has. I mean, all he needs is a lot of playing time. The guy's only 20 years old, but I think that unfortunately they gave up on him, but they're in this win now mode. So, you know, they got Gary Payton. you know, and they got rid of some draft picks in order to bring, you know, to ship off Wiseman and get Gary Payton. And they also, I'm just bringing up that, you know, I wanted to kind of comment on a couple of things that you brought up and just kind of bring it home that, you know, James Wiseman wasn't unfortunately the right pick for them just because, you know, I think if they, he wasn't necessarily, that wasn't his skill set. His skill set was offense, and they needed someone in their system to be like Trace Jackson Davis. The unfortunate thing is that Wiseman needs to play for a team that where the center is dominant. And right now there's no real NBA team other than maybe the Philadelphia 76ers and the Denver Nuggets where the center is dominant. But he's not that player, at least not yet. He could be, but he's not yet. So
I'm with you. And I agree with you. I mean, obviously they drafted Wiseman the year that Clay was out with his injury. I think on his second injury, I think, what was it? The Achilles, the ACL first and the Achilles second.
It was the Achilles was the
yeah. So he was on the ACL. So I get why they did that, but you know, to me, they shouldn't have drafted. There were a lot more players in that draft that were ready to contribute to a championship team that they could have drafted over Wiseman. Wiseman was, in terms of the talent level, was probably in the higher end of the lottery, but I agree with you. So that takes me to my third part on this topic, which is, can the Warriors do anything to turn this around? Can the Warriors be a championship team in the next 2 years? And I'm going to start with myself. I don't see it. I don't see there's anything they can do. And anything they would do would require trading Kuminga.
Yes, that's correct. They would. Yeah. I mean, they have a tradable asset in Chris Paul with his contract. They have the most appealing prospect for other GMs in Jonathan Kuminga. They probably also have another appealing prospect now with the emergence of Trace Jackson Davis and also Brandon Podziemski, right? It would take those three guys plus Chris Paul's contract and maybe throw in a Klay Thompson, Kevon Looney, right?
They'd have to re-sign Klay, but yeah.
Yeah, but to bring back something of substance to team up with, you know, Draymond Green and Curry. Because I think that's the way I think I would look at possibly doing something, you know, in the next 2 years before, you know, Curry's time is up, in order his contract is up, as well as Kerr's, is you'd have to do wholesale big changes. You know, of course, Wiggins, we forgot about Wiggins. But Wiggins, his value from where he was 2 years ago, you know, it's like, you know, dimes on the dollar now, right? It's unfortunate, but that's the reality of it. But you know, if they had Wiggins of 2022, you know, to trade along with the other things I already mentioned, they would be able to get something in return, right? So it's going to be a tough job for Mike Dunleavy to do this. And we all know Joe Lacob loves Jonathan Kuminga. He doesn't want to get rid of Jonathan Kuminga, but Joe Lacob also loved James Wiseman, and they got rid of James Wiseman. So
Joe Lacob loves to win.
He does, and he's gonna spend. He's gonna do whatever it takes. And you know, we already heard that he was already making calls to the LA Lakers about trying to inquire about what it would take to bring over LeBron James. You know, that was real. That was real.
But I'll tell you, Ed, they you put LeBron on this squad for minimal impact. Let's say you grab him for Looney and Wiggins. I know that's not gonna happen, but let's just say they still don't win a championship. Does not win a championship.
Yeah, they're too old. They need some youth. I mean, Jonathan Kuminga is that bridge to the youth right now. You know, I like Moses Moody. I don't know why he doesn't play enough. I guess because maybe he's too inconsistent, but he plays great D. That guy's a great defender. And Brandon Podziemski, he's hit a rookie wall, but that guy is good, man. So
you think he's a starter in this league?
I think he's a rotational player, honestly. I think
seventh guy.
I would say a seventh guy on a championship team. I think he's a seventh guy, but he's definitely in the rotation, in my opinion. Moses Moody would probably be like an eight, but, you know, he has the skill set to be a seven or a six. He just needs, you know, and he has the maturity, too, to be able to be there, too. He's a very grounded kid. And, you know, this guy could have easily, you know, lost his mind, just like Jonathan Kuminga lost his mind about not getting the playing time, right? He could easily be that guy, but he took the higher ground, and, you know, it's admirable. Yeah, I mean, that's you know, they're going to have to make wholesale changes. I think the changes are coming. I think the only way Klay stays is if it's a hometown discount type of thing, right? The only thing is that he tests the market's going to pay him, man. Any championship team is going to pay that guy to play for him.
Presuming they have the cap space, but yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, see, the only way that I see – the Warriors even potentially coming back is looking at teams like Oklahoma City or Houston Rockets and trading any combination of people as long as we can keep Kuminga.
Yeah.
You know, whether that means trading Draymond. You know, I think personally, like if Oklahoma, let's pick on Oklahoma here for a minute. If they're serious about winning a championship, I think a guy like Draymond would put them
over the top.
Over the top. But absolutely. Who do you get? Who can you, what young player can you get from them for Draymond to match up, you know, that is ready now, that could win something now? You know, is that possible? But I'm thinking this, it's got to take something like that, because you're not getting Giannis, you're not getting Jokic, you're not getting Embiid, you're not getting the main guys, Luka, you're not getting any of those guys. And to me, even if you are getting those guys, any one of those guys, I still don't think brings us a championship.
No, they won't. But the thing is that I think with the right role players, I think what the Warriors lack right now is a dominant number two scorer. They have a dominant number one scorer, but they lack a consistent dominant number two scorer. Klay Thompson was that guy, right? Mm-hmm. He's falling off a little bit, right? He's getting old, but he still can shoot, and he's streaky. He's always been streaky, but he's more streaky now, right? So,
well, the streaks are less often. That's basically what it is.
He's a great guy coming off the bench. And in my opinion, I think that move by bringing him to the bench has elevated his value, honestly, to other teams.
I agree.
That is unfortunate. I think the Warriors shot themselves in the foot by doing that. If they had plans of keeping Klay Thompson on the team on a hometown discount, I don't think that's going to happen. I'll be honest with you.
It wasn't the Warriors that shot themselves in the foot. It's Klay's attitude that shot the Warriors in the foot.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Klay acknowledged, this is better for me. I'm in a better place. I'm accepting my role. And so, you know, Klay is my favorite Warrior of all time, right?
Yeah, it's Klay and me too.
Klay and then two. Mullins, right?
He's number two.
Yeah, those are my one and two. And the reason I love Klay is because he can always acknowledge the situation. Obviously, Curry's the best Warrior that's ever been. Curry may arguably be the best Bay Area athlete there's ever been. I mean, I'm sure there's a couple of Montana and Rice and Lott fans that are going to jump down my throat, but I would argue that Curry's the best Bay Area athlete of all time.
Yeah.
But Klay, he said the right things. He took the right attitude. And so for me, if he gets a better deal somewhere else, then go with God. You know, you got my blessings, but I'd be sad to see him go, and I hope he stays. But again, they got to get rid of Wiggins. You know, at this point, probably they got to get rid of Looney. If they're going to try to win something, it's going to cost them Draymond at the minimum, you know, but I don't, then there's another draft that's coming up. We'll see if Dunleavy, because right now, you know, you and I watched Dunleavy play. In terms of a Warrior fanatic, he was very disappointing. We drafted him really high. He wasn't a great Warrior. He wasn't playing
the number three pick. Yeah.
No, of course. And so as an old Warrior fan, I remember that. You know, I remember how we played. But in terms of his first draft, he hit a home run. He couldn't have got two better players at where he drafted than the two that he got. So if he can do that again for two or three more seasons, then we may have something.
Yeah,
but you're right. Right now, we need to get a second scorer for Curry. And where that comes from,
the offseason. It could be Kuminga.
It could be.
Right,
he
just needs to develop more, and he's getting there. He's on the right trajectory. So
yeah,
but that's pretty much it on the time for this segment. Is there anything else you want to bring up on this one?
Did you want to go up my last topic?
Yeah, your last topic before we go on.
No. I think we're good. So the last topic, as I mentioned, I was talking to my brother, and you know, my brother works with some younger folks, some 20-plus-year-olds, early 30-year-olds, and he made a comment to me that I found fascinating, which was he said, you know, the younger fans, they don't really follow teams anymore. What they do is they follow players. They follow LeBron. They follow Luka. They follow Kyrie. So when a player moves, they don't really care, you know? And so I was sitting there and you know, in my natural, you know, old man on the yelling at the kids on the lawn, I was like, that's stupid. You know, how do you not develop any loyalty for your local team? Like a player will go away. So what happens to all the LeBron fans when LeBron retires? You know, where do they go? Do they find another player? Like, how does this work? You know, it's just like, for me, as much as I love Curry, as much as I love, you know, Mullins and Hardaway and all those players, you know, I'm a Warriors fan first and foremost. So whoever puts on the uniform, that's who I'm rooting for.
Right.
And so I wanted to kind of bounce that off, because that the more I thought about it, I'm like, hey, if that's the way that the youth does it, you know, you look at like the Premier League, you know, and they're Messi fans and Ronaldo fans. And you look at the NFL, but and so the NFL is one that is interesting to me because, you know, you'll have Mahomes fans and you'll have, you know, but the difference between to me, the NFL and the NBA is the NFL builds up their players, but it is clear that it's about the NFL first.
Correct.
It's first and foremost about the NFL. It's about the league.
It's about the teams too, the league and
correct.
The team.
It's about the team and it's about the league. So they managed to do it in a way that I think is healthy. I think the players run the NBA. Like they think they decide where they go, who they play with, who they're bringing on board. So I'm looking at this and I'm going, this is not a good thing. You know, if this is true, this is not a good thing. But I wanted to kind of run that by you, see what your thoughts were, you know, kind of get into it a little bit and talk about, you know, number one, had you heard that before? And if so, what are your thoughts around it?
I definitely have heard that from the youth. The youth definitely gravitates more to the players and not necessarily the teams. They do have also their teams, but it's usually the teams that their favorite player plays for, right?
Yeah,
so if that team actually leaves and goes to another team, they follow that player, but then they also follow the team that they were there also is because they, you know, they learned to love the other players around that player that they liked, right?
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I think that this has been something that's been in the NBA for a long time. And it's, I think it's something that's more conducive for the NBA because there's less players on the floor in the NBA, you know, than any other, you know, a team league, right? You have, you know, for baseball, you have 9 players for each team. Then you have football, you have 11 players for each team. In the NBA, you have 5, right? And then you have soccer, you have 11, right?
Yep.
For some like team sports, this is probably the one that it's conducive to really follow the players, right? Because they have the most impact. I mean, one player has 20% impact of that, the performance of that team, right?
Correct.
So it makes sense. And, you know, I think this all kind of started, you know, back really, I think, you know, the NBA started kind of understanding the potential of marketing the players, because back when, you know, Larry Bird and Magic Johnson started playing, it was all about the teams. And Larry Bird and Magic Johnson are, I think, because of their personalities and, of course, because of the rivalry in college, you know, they revived the NBA, right? So they saw that, oh, crap, you know, this makes sense to kind of market these guys more, right? And that's what they started doing. They started marketing Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. Then came, you know, Michael Jordan. You know, arguably the best player of all time. And, you know, you will remember those commercials like Mike, you know, wanna be like Mike, right? You know, it started then, right? And so, you know, that's when I think, you know, people started to gravitate to the players. I think the youth are the ones who probably started doing that. People like you and me, we were young at that time, but we were very loyal to our team, right?
Mm-hmm.
We were very loyal to, you know, we were loyal to, you know, Run TMC, you know, to Tim Hardaway, Mitch Richmond, you know, Chris Mullin, you know, those were our guys, right? And then, of course, you know, the We Believe years with Baron Davis, right? And Steven Jackson and Al Harrington, those were our guys. When they left, you know, I still followed them. You know, I still follow Chris Mullin when he was at the Indiana Pacers. Tim Hardaway when he went to Miami Heat, you know, and Mitch Richmond, he went to, you know, the Sacramento Kings. I still follow those guys, and I liked them, right? You know, I didn't necessarily exclusively follow them and forget about my own team. So I think that's kind of what you see, is that these guys follow their players, because I think the NBA is trying to market their players because they see the value in doing that. They get more viewership, right? Now, if you look at viewership entirely for the NBA, you know, since, you know, Jordan, you know, that Jordan, I think, is when it was at its all-time high. LeBron has also brought viewership to the NBA. Stephen Curry has brought viewership to the NBA. So I just think that, you know, this is something that is just the NBA. This is what they want. They see the results, and I think it's going to continue.
All right, but there's some subtlety there that I want to cover. So it's Larry Bird and the Boston Celtics.
Yeah.
It's Magic Johnson and the Los Angeles Lakers. It's Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. Yeah, even to this day, right, it's Stephen Curry and the Golden State Warriors. But it's LeBron and who? Kawhi and who? You know, Paul George and who? Kyrie and who? Like this is where I think is dangerous, right? These players have been put in a position where they just decide where they go, who they play with. And I don't, to me, I look at this and I'm going, you know, LeBron's a very polarizing figure. Either you love LeBron or you hate LeBron, right? I've never been a big fan of LeBron. He's a fantastic player. I'm not going to argue his accolades or his skill set or anything like that. But one of the reasons I don't like him is because of the way that he's manipulated the system around him. He's played baby GM. Everywhere he's went, he's made decisions. You know, as from what I heard, you know, the reason he didn't stick around in Miami was because he bumped heads with Riley. And Riley's like, yeah, you're not telling me how to create a team. You can go to hell. You know, basically is kind of what he's telling him, you know. And so I'm like, good for you, Riley. But to me, that's where I see a subtle difference, right? So if you're following LeBron, LeBron's like a mercenary, right? Even when he does sign with a team, it's always for 2 years, right? It's 1 year with an option out, always to leverage over people's head, you know? And so that's the part where I have a little bit of an issue with. If you're like Steph and you stay with a team forever, then good for you, you know, follow the player because the player and the team are synonymous.
Right.
Yeah, but you know, and even Mully, you know, Mully went to go play for the Pacers, but no one's going to question what Mully is. Mully's
correct. He's a warrior.
You know, he's a warrior.
Right.
Hardaway is a little bit different, but Mully was always a warrior. So you can kind of see. I mean, Jordan played for the Wizards, but no one's ever remembers Jordan the Wizard. Everyone remembers Jordan the Bull. You know, and you know, Pippen went to go play with the Rockets, but people remember Pippen as a Bull.
In the Blazers.
Like, in all honesty, what do you remember LeBron as? Is he a Cleveland? Is he a Cavalier? Is he a Laker? Is he a, you know, my guess is he'll be remembered as a Laker because they're the Lakers, right? Not because of the time he spent there, but just because they're the Lakers.
Right, right. Brand brings a lot of weight to this for sure. You know, I think it's part of the reason why, you know, as great as Tim Duncan is, you know, he's not regarded as, you know, as some of these other guys, right? Because he played for a small market team like the Spurs. The Spurs are not necessarily they're not, when you compare them to the Celtics and the Lakers, they're small. Yeah. And the Warriors now, right?
Yeah. Now, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, that's an interesting topic. But like, you know, if you compare it to, you know, the NFL and the NHL and the and soccer and baseball, you know, they're the ones who market the players the most. And it makes sense. And I understand why they do it. They've seen the results of doing it.
Yeah.
Baseball, I think, needs to catch up to that because they don't do it. They don't market their players as much. I mean, I think the only player that most people know in the major leagues, you know, is probably Shohei Ohtani. Honestly, that he's probably you know worldwide known, right? You know, Mike Trout before Shohei arrived, he was considered the best player, you know, in baseball, but nobody knew it because they never marketed it, right? Yep. So I think that it's conducive for the NBA to do this. And I think, in my opinion, it's good for the NBA. I think what you pointed out has been going on a lot longer than we think. It's been going on for years. I think we did it, you know, but we were loyal to our team. And it's very likely that that has switched. But when that switched, I don't know. Whereas now they're loyal to that player and not necessarily the team, but they still follow that team.
Yeah, I guess ultimately I'm the old man grumpy. I just don't like when the players take advantage of that power and use it against the teams they play for, you know. Ultimately, you know, I'd like for the player, I don't want to use the word loyalty because there's probably not loyalty both ways. We can have a whole different conversation around that. But I would like for these players to try to remain in one place and win a championship with, you know, who the GM picks as opposed to who they think it should be.
Right.
Because that formula hasn't worked out very well for LeBron, for Kyrie, for Kevin Durant. Like, it hasn't worked out well. Everywhere they went and brought their people, I don't think any of them have ever won anything.
Yep.
No, with the exception of the Heat. With the exception of the Heat, LeBron did win, you know, a couple with the Heat. But yeah.
Yeah, he started that process of players wanting to become GMs and dictate.
Yeah,
the
teams, and right? I think that's a bad formula.
It's a bad trend. Yeah.
I agree. So whatever can be done to minimize that would be great.
Yep. But yeah, great topics, Anthony or Tuan. Great topics and a great show for this week. You know, we covered the NCAA tournament. We covered the upcoming NBA playoffs. We covered, is it the end of the Warriors dynasty? And then we also covered about the viewership trends with the youth, whether, you know, it's good for the NBA and other sports franchises for, you know, these viewers to follow the players rather than the team. So all good topics, Tuan, for this week. And that's buzzer beaters.
Oh, hold on. Before you close out, Ed.
Before I close out, go for it.
Before you close out, I had a little sneak for our next show. I came across just something, food for thought, and for the fans out there, for anybody who's watching. I came across an article that talked about the most skilled players in the NBA, and they had a pyramid. And I'm going to send you the article because I want to talk about this. And they talk about the most skilled players in the NBA, right? And so it's really, really an interesting pyramid. And I'll give you a little bit of a tidbit here. LeBron is like on the fourth row down.
Is he really? Skilled.
Yes. On this particular article, he's on the fourth. So there's a pyramid.
Yeah.
There's a pyramid. He's on like the second to last row, if I remember right. Well, I'll send you the article. We'll go over it. But this is just something I want to get into next week because I find this fascinating.
And that's fascinating because if we're talking about LeBron at this age, I understand. But maybe LeBron in his youth, maybe that's a different story.
No, but we need to read on what constitutes skill.
Yeah.
You and I have had an argument like, is Shaq skilled or is he just big and fast? You know, like what is that really? So I wanted to get into that. So just a little bit of a tidbit for next week. I think that'd be a something to talk about.
All right. Well, that's a little foreshadowing of what's to come, audience.
Yes.
So this is Buzzer Beaters, episode one. We hope you enjoyed our show and welcome Anthony Corral to the team. And just as a reminder, for those of you who want to get more of these podcasts, just go to grumblingsmedia.com. You can also find us on Rumble, YouTube, under the profile Grumblings Media, as well as your traditional podcast outlets, such as Spotify, Google, and Apple. Twan, another great show, bro. And thanks. It was great catching up again. And until next time, man.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All right, brother. Later, man. Later, man.